Welcome to this interview. I'm Megan Gibson, co-host of the Relationship Super Conference. Today, I'm speaking with Sarika Jain, a leading South Asian love, relationship, and dating coach. Her unique approach encompasses everything from uncovering relationship patterns and closing one's ex files to practicing self-love and mindfulness in relationships, all with the goal of inspiring women to live the lives they've dreamed about, experiencing profound love, success, and fulfillment. Sarika's background includes working in the corporate world and on Wall Street for over 15 years before deciding to pursue her dream full-time of creating a movement around healthy love and empowerment for women over 10 years ago. She's a student of energy healing, psychology, feminine leadership, and relationships, and has studied life-centered therapy with licensed clinical psychologist Dr. Andy Hahn. She's been called a relationship sorceress by her clients. Sarika Jain, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. So excited to be here.
So I'd love, you know, we got a little bit of your background in my intro, but I would love if you could share us with us your story and how you got into this work.
Sure. So I actually started dating, obviously, in my 20s, and I was looking for the one. Being of South Asian descent, being the eldest of three daughters, I just felt this immense pressure to find my partner. And also, I have always had this deep desire for romantic union. Like since I was a kid, I would read about love stories and read the Q&A sections of women's magazines, especially around love. So it's always been something of interest to me. And so in my 20s, I was like, okay, I'm going to date to find the one. And I lived in New York City. And I read all these books on love and dating, and I even worked with a dating coach, and I thought I'd perfected dating. Like I was such a good dater. And I also went from relationship to relationship too. And so I started coaching other women in dating as a side gig to my corporate job. And in that process, I met a wonderful man. He was everything on my list. We got engaged, and then a month after our engagement, he broke up with me. Mm. And I was like, oh my God, this is, I mean, I was just shaken. I was heartbroken. I mean, I thought I'd really nailed this, understood this. And when I begged him to tell me why, he said, you're too controlling. You keep people at a distance from you. I don't feel safe with you. I don't trust you. And you still seem to have issues you need to sort through. And I was like, what, you know, but
good for him for being able to say so clearly.
Yeah. I just feel like those five pointers have become like the basis of my work, you know, because it was spelled out so clearly what my patterns were and what I think everyone struggles with. Every smart, successful woman that I work with struggles with these same issues on different levels, right? They're the same blocks. And so that night I cried in my sheets and I thought I would end my life because I tried everything. And a voice came from my heart that said, I need spiritual healing. And I was like, I don't know what that is. So then the very next day I walked around like a zombie and I saw a sign that said psychic and I walked in and this woman, Romanian gypsy, chain smoking woman, read my energy field. And she said, well, your heart and your sacral chakras are blocked and you're a magnet for heartbreak because of your thinking, because of your toxic thinking, your low self-worth, you've been settling for less. And she told me all sorts of stuff. And honestly, I still had no clue, but I'm like, okay, this sounds right. Like I have no idea what any of this means, but you know, she said, unless I learn from this, you know, I'm going to keep repeating the same patterns over and over in my life, unless I heal from this. And when I looked at my patterns, it was true. It was like every relationship I was dumped, you know, and it just seemed like my magnetism for heartbreak was just growing and growing. Mm. And so I was like, I just need to break this chain and maybe get my ex back. Like, of course that was my motivation. Right. Right. And so I embarked on this journey of self-love and looking at my patterns and rewiring my thinking and closing my ex files. And I reconciled with my ex. I figured out he wasn't the right one for me. And it was amicable. It wasn't like oh my God, like lifelong wondering if he was the one and he got away, you know, that kind of feeling. It was just like, okay, I can take this. Like, he's not the one. And then 90 days after I started this process, I met my husband in a meditation group, and I did not start dating him right away. Like, it was just friendship. Like, I saw him across the room. I was like, he's cute, but he's 5 years younger than me. His name sounds like my ex's name. Like, he had all these things that were not on my checklist. You know, he was unemployed, like whatever. I was just in the mode of just dating for the fun of it. Like, that's one thing I, you know, also want to like teach clients is dating as a path of self-discovery and personal, you know, growth. And I got back onto online dating, started meeting better quality men. And at the same time, I started talking to him, and it turned into a loving relationship. And yeah, we got married 2 years later, and now we have two kids with a third on the way. So that's kind of my story. And that's how I got into coaching in a more holistic way for clients. So not just dating, but also letting go of baggage, whether it's from your childhood or from past relationships, and learning to love yourself and then dating in a mindful, conscious way.
And I find that that's such a common thread with so many of the people that I speak with is that they start doing the work that they needed the most in their own lives, because that's the thing that's the closest to you that you can then help others with, because you've been down that road.
Yeah, totally.
Absolutely. Okay. So I want to go back to kind of the points that you made at the beginning of kind of what your ex had said were your problems and how those line up with, I know that you said that a lot of your clients have the same issues. So if you could rename those and then tell me what they look like in your clients' lives.
Sure. So the first one is being controlling. and that one really looks like not surrendering, you know, not kind of trusting your own intentions and actions and believing that the universe is conspiring to support you. And instead, what you're doing is you're trying to control your relationship, when he texts you back, how he responds to you, what he meant when he said this. Like, controlling in the relationship just starts looking like becoming overanalytical, becoming critical, becoming defensive, you know, when you think that the other person is trying to hurt you. I don't know. I think controlling shows up in so many ways in our lives. And the thing is in our careers, it's like, if you do a good job, you're going to get promoted. So you feel some sense of control in your career when you go down a traditional path. But love isn't like that. You know, love involves two people with their own individual will, you know, and you can't will someone to love you. You know, you yeah. kind of have to like allow for your love to blossom. And the thing that you can control is cultivating your love garden, as I call it. Like, put in your garden what you want: compassion, love, understanding, equanimity, mindfulness, whatever else you want in your garden. And if someone's attracted to that garden and wants to cultivate it with you, great, you know, and have fun doing that together, and know that you can't control what that person, if that person wants to leave the garden. Okay. You know, like, so I don't know, there's a bit of that trust element and kind of just letting go and allowing life to show up mysteriously for you.
I thought of two things when you were talking, which is, you know, as you're cultivating this garden, your garden might be perfect and the other person might have allergies to the things that you've grown, right? Like, just to go with that analogy a little bit, it's, and that doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with you or your garden. It's just not a good fit, right? But then the other thing, and when you related it to like what makes so many women successful and in their careers and in their work and even how they manage a house and a family, is kind of like collecting data, right? Mm-hmm. And making sure you don't make the same errors twice, and you're constantly kind of like collecting data about what works and what doesn't work. And when you apply that to your personal relationships, you can get into that controlling thing that you're talking about, where, especially in arguments where you're like, well, had you just said it like this, where you're trying to control the way someone else communicates with you, instead of doing your own work around your reactivity around how somebody else communicates. I've done that in my own relationships. I mean,
completely. I still do it.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And it took a long time for me to realize what I was doing. And I was like, oh gosh, this is my work, not my work to control him.
I know. And the thing is, men don't want to be controlled. You know, of course they want to be, they want to be respected. They want to be needed. They want to be trusted. So that's something I talk about with women, which we have a tough time doing those three things. And I think trust is another issue that women struggle with, you know, trusting themselves, trusting their own intuition, their self-expression, and trusting whether their actions are going to yield the results that they're seeking, you know. So you might be dating someone great and you've done all the right things, but then you're like, what if this doesn't work out, you know, and that starts nagging at you, you know. And that's what happens when women, they meet their partner and everything's going great. And then boom, like the second phase of, oh no, is this going to work out? You know, when is the left shoe going to drop?
I'm so sorry.
No, that's it.
I interrupted you. Sometimes Zoom is hard in that way. And so much of what we've been culturally normalized, you know, as women, we spend our whole lives hoping to be chosen, right? And so
claimed.
It's hard to trust, right? It's hard to trust when you've had that sort of like, not passive, but when that's how the dynamic, the power, the underlying kind of power dynamics have worked. And then you're just supposed to surrender trust that this person not only chose you now, but forever. And it's a lot.
It really is. And it plays out in the small ways, you know, like, oh, he hasn't responded to my text in the last 5 hours. He hasn't taken his profile down from the website. Mm-hmm. You know, like there are all these things that come up. He hasn't introduced me to his mom. He hasn't, he you know, he hasn't said, I love you yet. Like all of that, you know, and then it creates drama within yourself. Whereas if you kind of just let go, be yourself, be loving, be, you know, be refreshing to be around with a guy, give him a good experience. That's something I'd also talk about. Then he's going to do it on his own at the right time. And it's going to feel right. It's not going to feel rushed just because you wanted it in a certain timeline.
And that's not to say that you can't be, and maybe you would disagree with this, please, by all means, tell me, but that you can't have like, clear communication and boundaries, right? Yes. Like I remember when I met my now husband, he had just come out of a long-term relationship and they had never discussed the future of their relationship. And then it ended quite suddenly. And I remember, and they had cohabitated for a long time. And I remember when we got together, I was like, we will not languish. I was like, our intentions need to be clear. They don't need to be clear now. Obviously we just met, but, in 2.5 years, if you're not ready to move forward, then we need to part ways. That was just clear. I was like, and that's on neither of us. We are both free to make that determination, but we're not just going to like languish here comfortably together while my eggs expire.
No, I 100% agree. I think as a woman, like you have to share your vision. My vision is to find my partner, have a family, you know, like I have clients who are 35, nearing 40. And, you know, so I tell them, share your vision with your partner, you know, and if they don't have the same vision, they can leave. And yeah, you can have open, honest conversations with them, you know, absolutely. And so, but if you're doing it from a place of fear rather than love or trust, then that's the energy that gets, you know, it's that vibe of
that desperation,
the desperation. Sort,
Yeah.
So, and I tell them like that fear is never going to go away. Even once you get married, other things pop up, you know? So you kind of have to work on that trust within yourself, you know, and just trusting that life supports you. And then the third one is around keeping people at a distance from you. I think that has to do with people's fear around intimacy, you know, and really being seen. Like, what if my partner sees me for who I am and doesn't love me, you know? It's a very core wound that we have. And so we kind of put up a little bit of a wall, you know, maybe, you know, we want to be the cool girl, or, you know, we're always play acting in the relationship just to be that perfect woman, not, you know, not trying to like walk on eggshell, or I'm sorry, not, you know, wanting to like rock the boat. So we do things that maybe keep the peace in a relationship, but then don't support the intimacy, the deeper communication around like, this is where I'm feeling hurt, you know? And maybe some of this is me, but some of this, you know, can I request that you do this, you know? So going back to the case of my client who was freaking out because her partner hadn't taken his profile down, you know, she went to him and she's like, do you mind taking down your profile? And he's like, yeah, of course, let's do it together, you know? And he didn't make a big deal out of it. And she's like, wow, like, I didn't want to seem desperate. I didn't want to seem like that woman, but I had to tell him that. And he was like, great, no problem, you know? And so it's kind of just your own attitude towards like being able to have those uncomfortable conversations while also dealing with your own fears and things like that.
Well, and when you said that, also it reminded me that sometimes we're hiding our true selves from our partners because we're also hiding them from ourselves. Yeah. We're also not comfortable with kind of our own needs, desires, and wants. Mm-hmm. They scare us a little bit sometimes, especially when we're younger. And so it's not even that we're, and we're definitely, you know, sometimes play acting or putting on kind of what we think the other person wants to see, because that's kind of what we want to see too. That's the easy, acceptable road sometimes, is to just be a part, pretend to be a role.
Yeah, totally. And and the deeper your relationship goes, the more you might put up that wall, the more you might play act, you know? So it's a dangerous path to go down, you know, but there's always, like, I just feel like that area of putting people at a distance from you, I think that's an area that we're always going to be working on. Like, what does intimacy mean?
Yeah. You know? And that continues, right? It continues. Kind of forever.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And then this idea around, I don't feel safe with you. I think for me, that comes from emotional safety. So when we feel safe within ourselves emotionally, then we can hold space. So, you know, I call it self-empathy. I love nonviolent communication and what they teach around self-empathy and knowing your feelings and needs. And like, I really believe that we just have to ground ourselves in self-empathy. That's where we, you know, when we come from that place, we can build emotional capacity to be there for others. And so, you know, when you're aware, self-aware of your feelings and you're practicing self-care and things like that, then you don't react. Like, if a man does something, he's not going to be afraid that you're going to snap at him. And that's what men are afraid of. They're afraid that they're going to do something wrong and we're going to snap at them. And it happens one too many times. And then they're like,
and then they can't do anything right. Yeah.
They can't do anything right. Yeah.
And who wants to do anything if nothing they do is right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's like what they're most afraid of, you know? And so, yeah, I don't know. So I think around emotional safety and creating that within your partnership, that he can be himself. He's not going to be judged. He's not going to, of course, men make mistakes. We make mistakes, you know? But like knowing that you're not going to erupt for small things, you're allowed to erupt. Like, I believe in righteous anger and things like that. But if it's coming from a place of compassion and self-awareness rather than boom, just reacting, you know, and I was like that all the time. I was like an emotional roller coaster, you know, my highs would be high, my lows would be low, and I'd pull my partner into it. I'd blame my partner, and there was drama. Like, I was a drama queen, even though like I read books on how not to be a drama queen. I was, you know? And so I think, yeah. So that's the point there around safety.
It's interesting that you say that. I just had an incident yesterday where I took a look, my husband and I were both home. I took a look at my calendar and I realized that there was going to be a conflict today, this afternoon. Around my work, childcare, people being in different parts of the state. Like, and I just said, oh my God. And my husband was like, what? And I immediately catastrophized the entire thing. Mm-hmm. And I said, there's a problem tomorrow afternoon. And I And I started to just wind up. And then I looked at him and I said, I need 5 minutes to freak out. And then when I'm calm again, can we like get in solution mode and figure it out? And he was like, yeah, sure. Whereas normally I would have just like spiraled out. I would have drawn him into it. He would have gotten defensive because he's just trying to help. Like anyway, so he kind of goes away into another room for 5 minutes. I literally just go through the fire of all of the, you know, historical stuff about what's happened in the past and how I've got to always abandon everything. And then literally felt everything calm down. My heart rate slowed down. My breath slowed down and my rational mind returned. And I walked into the room and I said, okay, I'm calm again. Can we talk it out? And he was like, it must be really hard because you have had to do this and this and this so many times in the past. And it sounds like a really hard to juggle. And I'm sorry that my schedule would impact this. And now let's figure it out. And we did, but you know, but that's, you know, we've been together 15 years. It's taken a long time to get there, but it happens so often. And that's just one positive anecdote in a sea of many where I haven't been able to be that self-aware, right?
Yeah. And life is going to keep presenting stuff like that. You know, I tell my clients now who are just dating and I'm like, wait till you have kids. You're going to be exhausted. You're going to be your worst self. Your partner is going to be their worst self. Like you're preparing for that.
Exactly.
You know, and no one talks about this. No one talks about like what it really takes to make a marriage work and deal with two people's ups and downs and crises and, you know, things like that. And so, yeah, like I love your example. I thought it's great because it kind of reminds me of what my daughter's school teacher was telling us yesterday. She's like, you need to create a Zen space so that when any of you are melting down, you can go and take 5 minutes in your Zen space and teach your daughter that too. And I was like, you know what? I've heard this before because I'm into mindfulness and things like that, but I'd never practiced it, you know? And I'm like, okay, now it's time to start bringing that practice in. But I love that. I think taking space away from the people around you to practice whatever self-care you need. And if you need more than 5 minutes. Sometimes you need a day. Sometimes you need a whole weekend to yourself to do that. And that's healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the promising to return, right? That is the thing. Like I need some space. I promise I will return.
I love that.
I may.
That creates the trust. Yeah.
Right. And saying like, I'm going to need the weekend. I think it might be longer, but I promise I will check in. Right. That's how you leave your partner not feeling abandoned and you'll come back to it. Yeah.
I love that. Thank you.
All right. So what steps can women do to become relationship ready other than, you know, dealing with what we've kind of talked about?
Well, I think it's this, you know, I offer a step-by-step program where, you know, we first talk about self-love and building your own inner foundation, mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual. And the way I was explained it is if you don't have a firm foundation yourself, you can't build a house. Whatever house you build becomes a house of cards, you know, and it'll fall at the first gust. And so that's the foundation. And then the second step is around what I call healing your heart and closing your X files. And that is around examining, you know, your family blueprint, and then your exes and any other guilt you're carrying. So many of us carry so much guilt and shame. And it's about giving yourself the permission to look at it, love yourself and let it go. Like you just have to give yourself permission to living a guilt-free life. Mm. I think that's important because guilt is kind of what brings down your vibration and doesn't let you love, you know, because you're just so heavy, filled with baggage. So yeah, letting go of that baggage, closing your X-files, like we talked about.
And I think a lot of that has to do with the self-compassion step that you're talking about, right? With guilt and shame, especially that self-compassion work is how you release that and have compassion for the person that you were when you did those things or when, you know, the feelings of guilt and shame, like I can't think of anything specific, but you know, if the way that you behaved in your relationships in your late teens and early 20s, you know, you've got to have compassion for kind of the child, like adult that you were at that point. Right.
And just kind of
be compassionate for who you were and where you were and how you've grown since then.
Yeah. I love this practice that I learned from Thich Nhat Hanh. He wrote this book called Reconciliation. It's such a great book. And there's an exercise in there where you kind of go from your childhood to present. So, you know, I take clients, like, I'm like, start from zero, start from when you were conceived and, you know, go year by year and look at everything that you've done that you feel shame or regret around or whatever. And then practice like, I love you, I accept you, I forgive you, or whatever, or practice self-compassion for that little one, and be there for that one. And then just come all the way to present moment, you know? And for some people, this could take a really long time. Like, they could write 2 days of regrets. You know, I have them first listed out and then do this meditation. And yeah, like, this is like a once in a lifetime activity, but once you do it, you feel so much lighter, you mm-hmm. know? So yeah, I definitely recommend that.
I think most people don't realize what an anvil regrets are until they actually write them down and start that practice, huh?
Yeah. And it's so easy. Like, just do that one practice, dedicate 2 days to it, you know?
All right. Now talk about the X-Files.
Yes. Then the X-Files. So that one is around really like looking back at your most significant last relationship. And it could be even be the guy that just ghosted you, you know? So, you know, the one that kind of left you, you know, not trusting again, hurt, whatever it is, angry, sad. And just like going back, looking at, what came up, you know, I use NVC again, nonviolent communications, like write down what you felt, what you needed, take responsibility for yourself and, you know, and kind of just go through a ritual or a practice and then like do cord cutting. So that's where you actually like cut energetic cords with an ex. And it's so funny, like so many of my clients end up meeting their ex during this time period, you know, like an ex might reach out to them. You know,
it's like, and they can feel the energy shift and yes, the, yeah, yeah.
It's so crazy. Like the synchronicity that comes up with this process. And, yeah. And so you go through this process and then, yeah, you're free. And look, if it's meant to work out with your ex, it'll happen again, but not from that same place of attachment as before, unhealthy right. attachment before. It's going to be a new, fresh beginning. Or if you're meant to move on, then you will without regret, without wondering if he was the one, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's really important because I think I was telling you before, 67% of women who take my online quiz still have feelings for an ex, whether it is anger, wondering if he was the one, sadness, etc. And so it's a big block, I think, for women.
And I think you named what you're talking about, and correct me if you're wrong, is really closure, right? Because so many people feel like their relationships, they didn't get the satisfying closure and knowledge or explanations that would have made it make sense for them.
Yeah.
And so in doing this work, they're able to, because really that is independent work. Nothing mm-hmm. somebody else is going to say is going to fix it for you. So it's your work to really go into those relationships, look where you're accountable and responsible. Look what's yours, look at what's theirs, and then be able to sever that tie.
Yeah, totally. And most recently I'm supporting a woman going through a divorce, and I even had her write a huge letter to her partner, you know, so that she could share everything that, and I did that too. I actually wrote a huge letter to my ex. And I took responsibility. Like, I wasn't blaming him. I was, you know, I tried to make it as compassionate as possible, but being honest, you know, when this happened, this is what I felt and this is what I needed. Yeah. And, you know, and also talked about the good times. And so it's kind of like this whole process where you're like, yeah, taking responsibility, but expressing yourself and learning what you needed to, because that's why relationships are in our lives, so that we can learn our karmic lessons. And yeah, and that's how you can create a new pattern in your life.
And I want to note for anybody watching or listening that you don't necessarily mean you should send those letters.
You don't have
it's
to.
It's just the act of writing them, right?
Yeah, it's the act of writing it. And in this case, it made sense for her to send it, you know, but right. Yeah, in every case it doesn't. Absolutely. It's just, if you feel like there's still something unspoken and you want to say something, then do it, you know, because that's empowering. But of course, you can just send it to Mother Earth, you know, like to the ether, and know it'll get to him at a soul level.
Well, we've talked a lot about, I wouldn't say the weaknesses of women, but some of the ways in which women can grow and change in ways that will benefit their relationships. And now I kind of want to talk about the special gifts that women have when it comes to magnetizing and keeping great relationships.
Oh, great. And that goes into the next part, which is supporting women in discovering their wow factor. Mm. And so what I mean by wow is like our sexuality, our femininity, our unique purpose. You know, as women, we are naturally, like, biologically inclined towards relationship. We are actually emotional leaders, and we are the culture makers, the nest builders, et cetera. So, you know, it's kind of claiming back that feminine side that's been kind of discarded by our society, embracing it in your own way, like finding what that looks like within yourself, and becoming really in tune with your sexuality, like what gives you pleasure, what, you know, the way you want to represent your femininity, your sexuality, and your purpose, even like what are your unique gifts that you're here to cultivate and shine in. And so when you're kind of in that, like, wow, like I am actually amazing, you know, you start magnetizing the right people towards you, you know, and men find that very alluring when they're around a woman who's just confident in her, you know, in herself. Yeah. So I do think women are very gifted actually in relationship. It just so happens that we've never been taught it. So how would we, you know, really claim it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think you just named it, but that the wow factor, I think is what mm-hmm. you called it.
Yeah.
And so give me some more examples of what wow factor might actually look like in kind of practical terms.
Yeah. Well, I have clients who discover that they have intuitive abilities, or like they're clairaudient, or they're actually natural born, I don't know, channels or healers, or like natural born emotional leaders, like whatever your kind of skill is. And also like learning that they are actually very nurturing and very sexy. I mean, I think being sexy is something that I've personally had, you know, it's like the Madonna whore complex, where you're like, okay, either you're like this really proper woman at work, but then in your personal life, you're supposed to be a sexy vixen. And, you know, it's like these different archetypes get mixed up in our heads, and, you know, we don't really know how to be ourselves in our femininity or sexuality. Many women even don't even know what they want sexually in a partnership. And so you kind of go into the relationship a little disempowered, like just having sex to please a partner, you know, without knowing that actually men want to pleasure women, you know, not just sexually, but in every way, right? Like that's why men get cars and achieve status and all that stuff. Like they actually want to pleasure women, you know? And so when a woman is stepping into her own pleasure and her own desires and her own femininity, her sexiness, her, you know, like her own, like, I'm actually amazing, you know, then it just actually ends up, I don't know, like, just creating that magnetism and confidence. So when you are going to the next stage, which I call prepare for love, which is around like preparing your home, your life for a relationship. So many women are busy, you know, they're so caught up in their careers that they don't actually have time for love. Or maybe they have kids or whatever. And learning the right communication skills and things like that. And then dating, like, and so I support women in dating. And so, yeah. And then dating from that place of joy and pleasure, you know, and self-discovery. So I think being in your wow factor really supports in that.
And if I hear you right too, it's especially, and not just women that work outside the home, because every woman works.
Yes.
They're working inside their home, working outside their home. Yeah. We're all working. So, but there can often be that it's what I call it is like a trouble in making a shift. Mm-hmm. Right. So you work all day, and I, you know, for the last 2.5 years have been working exclusively from my home. And so, you know, I work all day, I lead a company, and then at 5 o'clock or sometimes 6 o'clock, depending on my clear boundaries, I have to like shift gears and go out and be like a mother and like shift into this different role. You know, people listen to me all day, and then I walk out in the kitchen and no one listens to me. That's my problem. But you know, it's that, and then I'm supposed to turn into this person who wants to like receive love and pleasure. Right.
No.
And even that I've in the past had a struggle with, right. Mm-hmm. Where, and I think that's kind of what you're talking about, where men want to please women, but sometimes women, we have trouble receiving that kind of a gift because of all the ways in which we have to, because of cultural norms and society, almost pretend to be men all day long.
Yeah. It's so true. It's so true. I think that's a big struggle for women.
Absolutely. All right. So how can people find out more about you and your course and your work?
Sure. You can actually go to my website, which is www.sarikajane.com. And I actually have a love magnet quiz. So the quiz allows you to find out what your Indian goddess archetype is and what relationship patterns you're seeing in your life, what kinds of men you're attracting into your life. And that's kind of the best way. And this month I'm launching an online course called Attract Your Soulmate. So I plan to launch it in May. I'm just coming up with the program right now. That's going to be a group program, which I'm excited about. And I offer private coaching.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. This was so fun. So fun.